Well, I want to start off by telling you about one of my favorite vacations. A few years back, my family and I went on an amazing vacation. We went on a 7-day cruise from Seattle to Alaska. We indulged in a cabin with a balcony. And I made some friends with folks who were staying in a suite on a private floor of the boat. And so I got to hang out up there and feel like a rock star. I ate delicious food at all hours of the day and night, even a midnight chocolate buffet. I went zip lining over waterfalls and a winding river. I toured the Alaskan brewery and found out how they get all the ingredients up to Alaska and the issues they have getting CO2 up there, and then they had to just make their own because it was so hard to get ships up there and to get everything going. And I had some samples. I played bingo. I watched the live performances on the boat. And when we got to Glacier Bay National Park, oh, it was beautiful. The boat circled around and got up close to the tallest glaciers I've ever seen. Well, really the only glaciers I've ever seen. And did you know that when glaciers break and fall into the water, it makes a sound they call white thunder? It's an amazing sound. I just sat on the balcony of our room, taking it all in. Gorgeous, awe-inspiring. I could sit here forever watching this. Cue some animals jumping up and frolicking in the waves. What a show. This is the life for me, I thought. Forever, living on this cruise ship, just floating around, making stops in Juneau and Skagway and Ketchikan, in Alaska forever. Have you ever gone on vacation and wanted to stay there and not come back? Did anyone come up with a couple vacations they just wanted to never end, maybe? And not come back to the day-to-day grind of our real lives? Unfortunately, we're not meant to live in vacation mode all the time. Not only that, but the reality of living on a cruise ship is not so glamorous. I think about all the storms they have to weather, and the temperature in Alaska isn't always 75 and sunny. I think it gets pretty cold up there in the winter, and sometimes the sun only makes an appearance for a few hours in the winter. So it's not looking like a vacation I would want to last forever. But I mean, people do live in Alaska. I don't know how or why, but they do. And I think I'm pretty happy living in Fort Scott. So why do we seem to think that the grass is greener on the other side? That if we just had what our neighbor has, we'd be better off? Well, we aren't the first to think that way, or to want what we don't have. This summer, we're in a series called Summer of Samuel. We're looking through 1 and 2 Samuel. Last week, we heard about Samuel as a child hearing from God. In chapter 8, Samuel is an older man looking to pass the torch of leadership within his family. But Israel has another plan for their future and demands a king instead of a judge to rule over them and protect them. They want a king in order to be like the other nations. "We want what they have," they yell. And when Samuel takes this request to God, God reminds Samuel, "It's not you, it's me." I love that line. Samuel tries to warn the people, letting them know what it would mean for them to have a king. It's the good, the bad, the ugly of a kingship. He says, you'll send your kids off to war and they'll fight and die. The king will take the best of what you, the best of your work in the fields and the vineyards. But all of this doesn't deter Israel. They wanted protection. They wanted a visible king, an idol. Israel seems to be forgetting what God has done for them and how God has provided for them in the past. The real issue at hand is not so much Israel's request for a king, Because kings are ultimately, they're not ultimately a bad thing to ask for. It's the fact that they have lost trust in God. Who brought them out of Egypt? Who wandered with them in the desert, leading them by a cloud and by fire? Who provided them with food? When there were conflicts, who provided them with a judge? When they needed guidance and correction, who provided them with a prophet? God did. God provided all these things for Israel, but they forgot. They lost their trust in God. And we forget too, don't we? We like to think that the grass is greener on the other side, that what our friends and family have should be ours too. When I was talking about my awesome vacation in Alaska, who thought to themselves, "Ugh, stop talking about your cruise. I've never been on a cruise. I've never been to Alaska. I need a vacation right now." Well, I conveniently left out that the fact that the morning of the cruise, I was so excited, I jumped off the hotel bed and sprained my ankle. I left out the part where I didn't get any sleep the first night because apparently our room was right next to the foghorn, which was blasting all night long, and the waves were choppy. And also, sharing a room with your parents when you're in your 30s might save some money, but it's not really the most convenient thing. I slept on the couch bed. I left out these parts because I wanted you to think that it was the greatest vacation ever. It was awesome, but nothing is perfect. We don't really like telling the whole story because we've got an image to uphold. When we start comparing our lives to the lives of others, we miss out on what God intends for us. We let the longing for more distract us from enjoying what we have. If you're on social media at all, you know this all too well. We put our best selves out there. We don't take pictures of our awful day when things don't work out the way we planned. We put sunshine pics and good makeup days and cover everything with filters and throw up our awesome vacations and our time spent with family and friends, the times where we're not all fighting and arguing. But when we're alone and scrolling through pictures of others, we see only the fun parts of their lives. And we think, life could be so much better if I just had that car or that job, that home, or if I was at that party or that whatever. And as we've seen this week with the loss of Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain, we don't always see the bigger picture of someone else's life. We've all got a lot more going on inside than we're willing to admit. And when we compare only the things that we see or the things that others want us to see, we miss out on a lot. The Israelites looked to the other nations and they saw wealth and power. If we're ruled by a human king, we too will have wealth and power like the other nations, they thought. We'll be able to defend our land and live in prosperity. As we continue through Samuel this summer, we'll see that God did provide a king, and they had some really good times, but they also had some lows. It turns out that when you put your hope and trust in a fellow human being, they can screw up, they can lead you astray, and they can let you down. The grass isn't always greener. What it comes down to is this: do we really trust that God will provide for our needs? It often seems easier to place trust in ourselves or on our friends and family than in God. Our world seems so unstable right now. Every day there's bad news coming from every direction. Putting our trust in God doesn't mean that we're shielded from the bad stuff, but it does mean that God is with us in the midst of it. So what does it look like to trust God with our future? We have hope. We take time to remember that God has been faithful in the past and will be faithful through all generations. We know that even when we think we know what's best for us, when we think we know what our hearts truly desire, we remember that God knows us best. God knows all of us, including the parts we keep hidden from others. God knows what we really need and provides for us in the perfect timing. We place our hope and trust not in the powers of this world, but in the faithful hands of God, of the God who creates, sustains, and redeems us. So this week, I encourage you to take time to consider all the ways that God has been faithful in your life, and take care of one another and yourselves. Amen.